On this episode of Still Loading, we finally meet Delilah. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I am your host of the podcast, Josh, and this is, in fact, a bonus episode of the podcast, and I'm very excited for this one because on this episode, I was lucky enough to interview my first voice actor for the podcast. I had the pleasure of interviewing Cissy Jones. Cissy Jones is a voice actress who's most famous for her role as Delilah in Firewatch, but she is also known for her role as Katya on the Walking Dead series by Telltale. She is also in the new Half-Life game, Half-Life Alyx. She has done voices for the new Disney cartoon, The Owl House. And she is also Kaguya in Naruto Shippuden. Now, I did not get to ask her about Naruto or Half-Life because it slipped my mind, but she was such a delight to have on the podcast. She was so nice, and I really think you are all going to enjoy this episode. So, without further ado, my interview with Cissy Jones. It's been a long time since I have played a game that has really hooked me. A couple weeks ago, I started playing a game called Firewatch for the first time, and as I was playing through it and I was checking the time, I saw that it was midnight. And it was a work night, so normally I would go to bed now, or I would be in bed already, because I would have to get up at usually 6:30 to get to work. But Firewatch had me so hooked, and pretty much the voice in my head just kept saying, fuck it. So I ended up staying up till 2 o'clock in the morning. Very few games caused me willingly to stay up past my bedtime as an adult, and Firewatch was one of them. And with me today on the show is one of the integral parts of the Firewatch experience. Cissy Jones, the voice of Delilah, is here. Cissy, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. Sorry for keeping you up late.
Oh, that's not your fault. That was 100% my choice, and it was well worth it. So, to start off, I asked Gareth Coker this last time when he was the last person I interviewed on the show, and I've been trying to do this more frequently. What got you into video games first? Was it something you grew up with, and what types of games do you like to play?
It's kind of a roundabout, non-linear answer.
Go for it.
You know, I grew up with the NES. I grew up on Super Mario Brothers and arcade games like Bubble Bobble and, you know, all that stuff. But then I ran out of time and I really couldn't play for a long time. And I, you know, once the flat paddles went away, or the flat controllers, whatever you call mm-hmm. them, and they were replaced with these newfangled thingamabobs, I was like, too many fingers involved. So I stopped playing for a long time. And then I got into corporate life and I worked in the Silicon Valley for 10 years and super hated my life and found voiceover and started taking classes, et cetera. And my second audition from my agent when I finally got signed was for Katya in The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. And it happened to be my first job. So that was kind of my entree back into video games. Since then, I've started playing a little bit more, mm-hmm. Mostly mobile games and things like that. Although I did finally play After Party, which if you haven't played After Party yet,
I have not. I've never even heard of it. I'm going to look it up while you're going.
It's the same team that did Oxenfree.
Oh, okay. I've heard of Oxenfree. I haven't played it, but I've heard of it.
It's real fun. It's just stupid, silly fun. But I did finally play that on my brand new PS4 that I've been tinkering with.
That's interesting to hear. And it, like the way you were talking about your path, how you started off with the NES and then kind of fell off and came back, unfortunately, you know, being adult does kind of take away a lot of the joys of childhood and stuff like that.
It does, man. Well, and it's so hard to, for me personally, it's daunting to start a game knowing that you got to sink a couple hundred hours
into it. If it's like a 60 hour game. Exactly. It, like, I want to play Persona 5 so bad. But that is, everything I've heard is like it's a 100-hour game. And I'm like, I don't have time for that. You were saying how, like, once it got to more 3D-based stuff, it kind of turned you off from it. And I think that is, I've heard from other podcasts as well, that is a very common thing because the skip from 2D to 3D was like it alienated so many gamers who grew up with the 2D stuff.
Well, it was weird too, because when I was a kid, you know, my brother and I always used to play together, and I on the flat controllers, I learned to play with my pointer finger and my middle finger, so I could run really fast and then jump at the same time, and his little feet would still be running when he was jumping. So then when the new controllers came out and they were all thumbs with like fingers controlling the way your head turns, I was like, I don't understand any of this.
Well, if you look at the sales numbers for like Mario games, I didn't come up with these, I didn't look up these statistics now, but I got this from another podcast called Retronauts, which I've talked about way too many times, but they, if you look at Mario sales numbers, like there was a huge drop off from 2D to 3D, and the numbers kept dropping until somewhat recently when they got new Super Mario's back for the DS, then all of a sudden the numbers started rising again. So it's like that 3D thing really has it does affect the sales a lot. It's kind of coming back now because now there's so many kids who are growing up with 3D games, so they don't, that's what they know. But that's interesting to see how it kind of all started off and how you started out and then you kind of came back to it. And you were talking about how your first role was The Walking Dead. But before you got to The Walking Dead, what, I guess, I hate using this term because it's so cliche, but what inspired you to become a voice actor?
So I was working in the Silicon Valley. I actually have a degree in business and Spanish, and I was putting my degree to work, and I was working for some really cool companies and meeting some great people, but I just felt hollow. Like it just wasn't right. And then I ended up working for this company that was really awful, like particularly brutal. The person in charge was abusive, verbally and emotionally. And, you know, I was working 110-hour weeks and I just...
Dear Lord.
Yeah. I remember at one point just having a full mental breakdown. And my now husband and I went to Alaska to visit some family. We went out salmon fishing and we were out on the open ocean for 9 days. And you get to talking about some strange things after 9 days on the open ocean. And so we started talking about dream jobs. And I was like, God, you know, I've always wanted to be a voice on The Simpsons, but I'm sure you just have to live in Hollywood. You know, I didn't know the term voiceover. I knew nothing. And my aunt, who was like one of my favorite humans on the planet, was like, oh my God, you'd be great at that. You know, you've always had a knack for accents and things like that. And I just kind of tucked it in the back of my head and went about our day. And when we got home from the trip, I was getting ready for work, one of those soul crushing mornings. And Nancy Cartwright, who is the voice of Bart Simpson, came on the radio, the morning show that I was listening to promote the Simpsons movie. Now, at the time, I was living in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, and she was talking about voiceover and how it's this incredible job and it's the best job on the planet. And God, you guys in the Bay Area are so lucky. You have one of the best voiceover schools right here in your own backyard. And I was like, what?
There's a voiceover school?
Yeah. So I called the school that day. I started taking classes that week. And
oh, wow.
2 years later, after pouring myself into it, I was able to leave my golden handcuffs in the Silicon Valley and make a go for it.
There's something to be said about kind of devoting yourself entirely to something you're passionate about. I'm a huge fan of Kevin Smith and, you know, Clerks and all that stuff. And he talks about on his podcast how when he was being inspired to write Clerks or become a filmmaker, his sister told him something where it was like, he said, wouldn't that be cool to be a filmmaker? And she's like, well, just be that. And he goes, yeah, wouldn't that be cool? She's like, no, just be that. Like,
you're just
a filmmaker that just hasn't made a film yet. And the way you kind of explained how you got into voice acting there kind of reminded me of that in a sense, where it's just like, you know, fuck it. I want to do this. I'm tired of, I know what I want to be. I know what I want to do. So I'm just going to do it. I'm not going to stop. I'm just going to do it.
And I've always found in my life also, you know, whether it's with relationships or my career or friendships or whatever, if something's not meant to be, I keep running into these insurmountable roadblocks. Like it's just too hard, right? But when it's the right path, it, for me at least, has always just kind of come together like a zipper, if that makes sense. And that's how it was with my husband, and that's how it was with voiceover. It was remarkably smooth. You know, it wasn't this like beating my head against a steel wall like I felt in the business world and trying to climb in the Silicon Valley and not really, you know, square peg, round hole. And then finding voiceover and being like, oh my God, I'm home.
You know? Yeah. I can understand that because I work at a company called I work at a company that does background checks. Oh my gosh, I'm tired. I don't mind it all that much, but like what really gets me excited is doing this. Like I realized I actually went to school for video game design, and I realized shortly after that I don't like making video games. I like talking about them. So I found a way to kind of merge that over into something new. So I completely understand what you're saying. Like when you find that thing that just kind of works for you, it's not to say that you don't go through hardships and you don't go through struggles to get there, but those struggles, you don't look at them as a wall. You kind of look at them as a rock wall for you to climb over, if that makes sense.
Yeah. 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 It's just a divergent path that you need to go around. It's not insurmountable. Yeah. Yeah. And that's how VO was for me. You know, now listen, it's not that I don't work my ass off, and it's not that I'm not constantly thinking about what the next job is. And it's not that, you know, I mean, you know, I had 8 days of maternity leave, for God's sake. So it's not like,
oh my God,
it's not like there aren't challenges. There
yeah.
are challenges, but I'm so happy doing what I do. I'm so happy.
That's really interesting. That's really cool, though. I don't know. To me, that's just neat how you're just like, this is what I want to do. So you just went out and did it. And I think a lot of people, they put up that mental roadblock where they're just like, nah, I don't think I can. And yeah. But you just kind of went on and went through it. So
well, listen, it's scary. It's scary as hell, right? Like I think I was 30 when I finally, you know, was able to quit my job. And that's a scary age to make a change like that. You've spent your entire 20s doing a thing. You know, you went to school for the thing. You're using your degree for the thing. This is the thing you're supposed to be doing. Here's the thing. Oh God, I hate the thing. Right. And
yeah.
And making that change was really scary. We moved from the Bay Area to Los Angeles, and that was terrifying. And then we moved here and I didn't book for a year. It was scary. You know, because the LA market is so different from the San Francisco market, and that's a whole other podcast. But you know, I was really lucky that I have a husband who believes in me. I have an agent who believes in me. I knew my own skill. I knew if this wasn't going to work, I was going to go like bag groceries. And so it was just this like you know, take no prisoners. You know.
I get you. And I really want to, I'm very tempted to actually dive into that the marketing, not in like nitty gritty details, but I know there's actually people who, I was told there was people who would listen to this episode who might be curious about the ins and outs of the voiceover industry.
Sure.
I guess because you were saying it's a complex topic of the difference between the industry in the Bay Area and the industry in Los Angeles. Is that something that's kind of similar for other aspects of the country too, where it's like is it just the amount of work that's offered is different? Is that the main difference, I would assume?
Part of it. Part of it is that the majority of the jobs that you really want to book that really make it possible to do this as a living are union. And most of the union jobs come through Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, maybe Atlanta, although less so. And San Francisco has a really great market because there's a ton of games happening up there, but a lot of them are non-union. There's burgeoning markets all over the country that have a pretty strong non-union job. The difference is that if I book a union commercial, let's say, every time it airs, I get paid. And so it's an easier way to make a living, right? Video games are so much fun. They don't keep the lights on, right?
I could understand that.
Yeah, so if you book a non-union commercial in San Francisco, it's a buyout. You get a one-time flat fee. And that could be the difference between, you know, $500 and $5,000, right? It's a pretty significant difference. Also, animation, all of the animation happens in Los Angeles, with very few exceptions. There's a lot happening in Canada, but if you're not a Canadian citizen, you can't work in it.
Huh, I did not know
yeah.
that.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, the other thing, too, is that in L.A. are all the heavy hitters, right? And unlike other industries, take tech, for instance, people get promoted and their jobs become available. That doesn't happen in voiceover, right? So
yeah.
I am still competing against Kari Wahlgren and Courtney Taylor and Jen Hale and Tara Strong and Gray Delisle, who I adore. I mean, they're all incredible talents, but it's a whole different ball game.
That is a weird mindset to be put into, because I was trying to do research to make sure I came as prepared as possible, and I did see like you're really good friends with Courtney Taylor, And so it's got to be like a weird, I mean, I'm sure it's easier depending on the person, but it's got to be like a weird balance to balance a friendship, but at the same time be competing with that same friend for a lot of work.
Here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. VoiceOver is filled with the greatest people on the planet. There is a marked difference between doing on-camera work, which I don't do, and doing voiceover work, because it doesn't matter what you look like. It matters what you bring to the character, right? And yes. So there's this incredible camaraderie amongst all of the voice actors, with very few exception, that I've met. Most people are kind and supportive. And, you know, I can't tell you the number of times someone's come to me and said, we want you for this job. And I'm like, I'm not right for it. But you know who is? This person, right?
Interesting. Okay.
And it happens all the time. And it's just this wonderful community of not assholes.
That's so, I mean, I guess every time I've listened to interviews with a voice actress, it's always a vibe I get, but it's always heartening, no matter how many times I hear it from voice actors or from other people, just to hear that everyone in that industry, or the vast majority of people in that industry, are just super good, down-to-earth people.
Yeah.
I guess to kind of talk about, I mean, this is kind of jumping back a little bit, but you were talking about animation. A lot of the powerhouses were in LA. I did actually watch one of the shows that you were on recently, The Owl House.
I love that show.
And I remember I saw it was Disney. I'm like, okay, I'm not sure. Disney is hit or miss with me. I loved it. I didn't get to an episode you were in, unfortunately, because it was behind a paywall.
Yeah.
And I don't have cable, because I think your first episode is episode 5.
Something like that,
which
yeah.
is a really popular episode, too. But you play Lilith on that show.
I do. So after the whole season 1 airs, season 1 will be available on Disney Plus.
Perfect.
Right,
I will watch
now
all
it's
of
on
it
Disney
then.
Channel. Yeah. So I play Lilith. I play Ida, who's the main character. I play her sister. And
okay.
It's a really fun character. I don't want to give anything away, but she's super fun and she goes to some real interesting places.
What I loved about the show was its sense of humor. And for those who have not watched it, The Owl House is a cartoon on Disney Channel. You can actually watch the first episode for free on Disney Now, just if you go to their website, just fun fact. And some of the newer ones too. It's just all the middle ones are not free.
Yeah, it's funny. It's actually classified as a comedy horror.
I could see that. I could, with the visuals specifically.
Yeah.
But so The Owl House is about this girl named Luz who is kind of like, she's a geek in a good way, though. Like,
yeah.
she loves, you know, reading books and swords and sorcery. And so her mom really wants her to kind of conform to a quote-unquote normal teenage existence. I don't really know how else to describe it. And she is able, on happenstance, the book that she loves, I forget what the book's called right now, but I did watch the episode, I promised. But it escapes, it gets kidnapped by this owl, and it takes her to this completely parallel dimension where everything's all topsy-turvy, and she wants to become a witch. And she is the apprentice of Ida.
Ida the Owl Lady.
And that's pretty much the setup for the show. I mean, I wouldn't go into it. I don't know all the overarching story, if there is one yet at all, but when I watched the first episode, I was going into it with no expectations. I had no idea what to expect. And I legitimately laughed out loud, so much so that as soon as I finished watching it, I went downstairs and I'm like, I talked to my wife. I said, you need to watch this show. And she really liked the first episode as well. So once the full season's out, it's on Disney Plus. Her and I are going to be binging that full season because enjoyed it.
I'd love to know what you think.
It's I think what sold me was the opening scene of Luz. Basically, she's imagining this big fight between a dragon and a sorceress, and then she blows up the dragon. And then it cuts back to the real world, and she's in the principal's office, and she's just holding a snake. And
yeah.
The principal's talking about this book report of hers that just went awry, and you just see her teacher running in the back, and a snake is chasing after him. and I was hooked from there. I thought that was a really funny bit of humor. It was done really well. It didn't feel forced. It was just, I liked it. I really liked it.
It's great. And the show creator, Dana, she just has this wicked sense of humor. She's just really funny. And Yeah, it's I'm so stoked to be a part of it.
I'm happy that I found it because I got a chance to interview you. So you're working on that, and I guess so. Now we're actually going to go back to the beginning of your career. now that I got that little fangirl moment out, or fangasm moment, I don't know. But let's go back to the beginning of your career. You started out on the Walking Dead games as Katya, and I was trying to look up interviews so I wouldn't ask questions that you've gotten a whole bunch. I know I'm going to ask a bunch that you've already gotten because it's so hard to find unique ones. But I actually would like to hear your telling of the story of how you prepared for the role of Katya, because I thought that was funny when I looked it up in interviews.
Yeah, so I got the first round of auditions, and you know, I auditioned for Clementine, I auditioned for Lily, I auditioned for all of the characters. And there was this one, you know, middle-aged veterinarian, you know, a little plump. but there was something about her kindness and her sweetness that really struck a chord with me. She reminded me very much of someone very near and dear to my heart, you know, who lived through tragedy and all this. And she was Belgian. And so I turned in this horrible, you know, oh, you know, horrible thing. But they liked the acting choices I had made. And so they had me do a callback. And I was like, oh, shit, I better learn a fucking Belgian accent, like on the double. So I had this friend who was from Belgium, and I just followed him around with a tape recorder like a whole weekend. And he was like, what are you doing? What is this? Why are you following me? And I was like, I just want to hear your voice. Let me watch your mouth. I just
want
to see your mouth
move. I want that to be a
sitcom.
And so I'm just picturing it now.
Oh my God, I know. So I took that in conjunction with a website called the International Dialects of English Archive, and just listened to these clips over and over and over and over and over and over and over, and finally turned in my audition, booked it. And then every time I was getting ready to go to the session, I would have to start listening again so that I could get back into the accent, because she had lived in the States since she was 14. And so her accent was very light when she would talk, so it wasn't overwhelming Belgian, but just little words here and there were just noticeably different. And so it was making sure that I could get back there and not completely fuck it up when I got back in the booth.
What is the hardest thing about accents to learn? Is it trying to unlearn some of your, like, unconscious accents, I guess? Or is there anything that, like, threw you for a loop when you have to learn accents?
Honestly, it's that there are some accents that are hard to shake. Like if I have to do a Southern character, you know, like a real genteel Southern character, and you get in there and you're doing this thing and da-da-da-da, and then they want you to go to British, sometimes it's real hard to shake. So it's funny how you can get stuck in an accent and having to find your way back out of it without making a complete idiot of yourself. It's tricky sometimes. And also finding the certain accents that are tricky to do. You know, there are some you'd think like, oh, yeah, sure, German, I can knock that out. It's hard for me. I don't know why. It just is. And others are super easy. Like I had a friend who was Russian, and I had to do a Russian character. And she said, Ivan trick the Russian. I said, yes. She goes, add sneer, remove joy.
I feel like one of the things that I feel like, especially for someone who's not a voice actor like me, is when I can't do accents. I cannot do accents. I can do stupid voices that I can't, like, I can't act, so I can't turn them into a character, but if I try to do an accent, it's awful. So I'm always fascinated. That's why I wanted to ask, because I'm always fascinated by actors who can pull off accents. And this is a complete non sequitur question regarding accents, though. My wife has this theory, and I want to see if you agree with it. Do you think an Australian accent is just a Southern English accent?
Ooh, I don't know, man. That's fighting words in some parts of the world.
I will delete that out then.
No, you don't have to delete it. I mean, here's the thing, is Australian has the O, right? So, yeah. So you know, British will say so, da 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 da. Australian will say so, right? It's got this like that can be a real bugger to pull off. So it's kind of, but not really-ish.
I'm just always fascinated by people who are able to do accents. Anyway, off of the accent talk. So before we dive into Firewatch, one question I wanted to ask was, are there any types of roles you look for when you're trying to challenge yourself? Or do you look for roles that challenge you as an actor that make you kind of forces you to work on your craft more than you expect?
Sure. But here's the other thing is, you know, I don't exactly get to pick roles, right? I don't get to be like, I want to do that. And I get that. Sometimes, but very rarely. Most often it is auditions come in. I have to do my best. And if I book it, I book it. If I don't, move on. So what I love is when I get an audition that makes me think, an audition that makes me want to put extra work into it. Yeah, for sure. You know, I'm working on a couple of indies right now that are just gorgeous, and I want to give everything I can to them. On the flip side, you know, if I get an audition for a game that's only exclamation points, I don't do it because I don't want to fuck up my voice. So I don't know if that really answers your question.
No, it does. It does. Well, you, like you just said, you have to be somewhat picky depending on the not. Picky and like that's not the right term. If you, like you said, you don't want to fuck up your voice. So if you know there's a role that's going to screw your vocal cords, it's not necessarily something you'd want to do.
No. No.
Are some of those indie games you're talking about, I did see you tweeted some of them on Twitter, Call of the Sea.
Yes.
And I didn't get to, I watched a trailer for that and it looks like, what was the other one?
You just tweeted one of those.
That's what it is. Okay.
Yeah.
So what are those games about? I haven't even really, are you not able to talk about them too much just yet?
I'll tell you what I can. Call of the Sea is this gorgeous game based in the 30s.
Oh, I'm already sold.
It's about a woman who goes off in search of her husband.
Okay.
And it's very Lovecraftian, and that's all I'm going to say.
Fair enough.
And then Forever Ago is this beautiful game about this old man, Alfred, who goes on a road trip, essentially. And it's just following his journey. And, it, you know, what I love about it, both of them, honestly, is that they're completely atypical protagonists. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not the typical player character. And they just tell fun stories. That's what I love about indies so much, is that they're able to tell these stories that just get right to the heart of things. You know, it's there's less of a need to please the masses, because not everybody is going to go for this one type of game. You know what I mean? And so
100%.
Yeah. So it's the ability to tell human stories or non-human stories, but stories that make you care.
I remember 10 years ago, actually, right when you started getting in, I think because you started in 2010, right? Or close to that.
Ish, yeah.
Right. Right around 2010, I remember the games industry was very much at a transition point, because there were so many AAA titles and they were all so bloated. And it was a lot of the companies were trying to figure out how to make games in an HD world. And HD development is so much more expensive than SD development was.
Yeah.
And prices ballooned. At that time, you would have a lot of games that didn't really push the envelope, for lack of a better term. They didn't really try to do anything unique. They just tried to appease the lowest common denominator. And some games, you know, there were, you know, bright spots. There were exceptions, Demon Souls and Dark Souls. And then towards the latter half of that, right when indies really started getting to take off, 2013, you had Bioshock Infinite and then you had Last of Us and Walking Dead. Yes, you had The Walking Dead. And with Telltale, that was a new type of, that was kind of the next logical step, I guess, of the point and click adventure games almost.
Yeah.
It just kind of went in a different direction. So it's kind of cool to see where games have gone, like where they've come from. Like I love video game history, so that's why I kind of talk about that.
Yeah, but, no, I mean, I used to give a whole speech about the history of voiceover in video games, right?
Really?
Yeah. But I feel like it was right with that Bioshock, Walking Dead. I mean, that was kind of the tipping point into, because I still get fan mail of like, oh my God, The Walking Dead's the first video game that ever made me cry, you know? And then you follow that with Life is Strange and then The Last of Us and, you know, on and on and on. And you're starting to get these really deeply personal stories that people are legitimately shedding tears over. That didn't happen before. You know, I didn't cry when Princess Peach was saved from the dragon guy.
For the 50th time.
For the 5,000th. Help yourself, Princess Peach, for Christ's sake.
Have you ever heard of the game Super Princess Peach?
No.
It's Nintendo's stab at making Peach the star. And
oh, Christ.
Well, they hit it in some aspects and missed it in others. They hit it because Peach is saving Mario, so they did a role reversal, which is cool, but all of her powers are based off of her emotions, so it was just, it was kind of like a weird, it was a fun game, like all the powers were super fun and the puzzles were really well done. It was a really good game, but it was kind of like you're trying to flip things on its head and, you know, make her the star, but then you're basing all of her powers off of her emotions, which right. I don't, it was kind of a weird mixed message, but that's also from my viewpoint. I don't know if that's more for women to decide if that was really problematic or not, but, but you're right. Right around that time is when everything started to shift over to, especially narrative-based, and we could kind of branch out into Firewatch then, because Firewatch is a very narrative-driven game, and I'm not much of like a quote-unquote walking simulator fan, and Firewatch is kind of something like that, but what Firewatch did that hooked me was the narrative, and I don't mind walking simulators if the actual world or the walking quote-unquote is at least fun to do. Some of them I've played, there's just nothing to look at, or it's all just abstract stuff which doesn't resonate emotionally with me, but Firewatch did. It really did. So what was it like to work on that? I think you were offered the role for that, correct?
I was. So I had worked with Sean Vanneman and Jake Rodkin, who were the creators of Firewatch. I had worked with them on The Walking Dead. They, you know, Sean and Jake were the main writers, I think, for season one. And I met them at the rap party, and Sean was like, "Oh my God, that accent, you nailed it. And I'm working on a new game. Do you want to, talk?" And I was like, "Yeah." And it was a dream come true. I mean, what else can I say? It was so much fun, and they let me put so much personality into Delilah. You know, Sean and I have an easy rapport, so it was easier for him to write for me in his own words, because he knows I'm kind of an idiot, and I make stupid jokes, and, you know, I like to kind of rib people a little bit. And so we got to just have these incredible sessions with me and Sean and Rich on all at the same time, and God, it was great. It was so much fun, you know, and I knew it was going to be special. The hype that was out there about it was kind of unreal. You know, this was my first lead in a game, and you know, my agent was like, "You better hire PR." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And so I hired PR, and like, I got inundated with interview requests, and I was like, "Holy shit, this is what?" And, you know, the night before it shipped, I felt like I was going to barf all over the place. I was so nervous. And then the reaction was just a tidal wave. It was insane. Just, I mean, my, you know, I think I had like 500 Twitter followers or something insane, and it just exploded. And then, I mean, a couple times a week still, I get the most incredible messages from people about, you know, "My God, that got me through such a tough time," or I miss Delilah. "I'm so mad we didn't get to meet her." I got some real strange messages too of like,
I believe it.
People cussing me out for not waiting, and I'm like, "You realize I'm a character, right?
Like, I didn't write it."
Yeah. You know, marriage proposals and all this stuff.
Oh my gosh.
But it was great because of that game. You know, that's how Call of the Sea found me. That's how Forever Ago found me. I just signed on to another indie project that loved Firewatch, and so they reached out to me. And you know, God, what else can you ask for? It was so great. It was such a great experience. I loved it. I cherish it.
One thing I when I was doing research for the interview, for this interview, I was really impressed, I guess, it's a weird word to use, but I can't think of anything else that more accurately describes it. Just impressed with how much, no matter how many times I see you do interviews for this game, you never get tired of it in a good way. Like, I think that's really cool, because I would assume, and you see it with other actors and voice actors and people in the industry, when they get asked so many times about one specific project, it gets a little nauseating at times, just because that's all like, that's not the only thing I'm known for type of thing.
I guess, but Firewatch was so special. It'll always be special to me, you know?
I loved it. I really did. I remember when I was playing it, and I was bummed out, too, that Delilah didn't wait at the very
end. Spoiler alert.
And actually, the little tagline that I do is going to be on this episode of Still Loading, we finally meet Delilah. I really liked it. And I remember, I forget which interview you were on, but I thought you made a really good point about how if people would have seen Delilah, it would have ruined the game.
Yeah.
Because the whole purpose of not knowing who Delilah is that you have to imagine her like what you envision based off of your conversations, not based off of anything else.
And what makes it so special is that you have to decide how you feel about her, not based on her looks, mm-hmm. right? You have mm-hmm. to decide, you know, am I going to romance this person because I think she's funny and witty and charming? Am I going to ignore her because I think she's annoying as fuck? Am I sad that I don't get to meet her? I mean, when do you ever get to do that in a game?
And I think right? It was interesting because I actually see it now on Wikipedia, but I first heard it from one of your interviews that one of the reasons why you don't actually see anyone, it was a limitation of basically the development team, because there was such a small team, they didn't have time to animate the faces, and it would also have been really fucking expensive.
Yeah.
And so because that
game was made by 8 people.
That's wild.
That game was made by 8 people. But if you add in, you know, like you said, animation of face, it just, the cost balloons. You're going to hire a ton more people. And if you look back at the game, you see Henry's face and Brian's face, and that's it.
Well, what I think
you see the dad too, Ned,
mm-hmm.
but you never see him talking.
Well, what I thought was cool was that I didn't notice that. Like, I think the game was so well designed that I didn't even notice that you didn't see really anyone's faces. You don't see the Skinny Dipper's faces. You don't really mm-hmm. see I guess you just said you saw Ned's face. I don't remember seeing. I guess in pictures, maybe.
In the picture, yeah.
Yeah.
Even but you Julia's don't have to face that. You don't see because she's holding the camera in front of her face.
Mm-hmm.
In the photo that he has.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. I didn't even think about that either.
Yeah.
And it just, I was so blown away by it just because I felt so connected to both. I understood Henry's plight, not because my wife's going through that, thank God. But like, it made me think because my wife and I are relatively newlyweds. We've only been married for 2 years now. And just thinking about being married to someone and then having that happen, I was like, I don't know what I would do.
Yeah.
And understanding why he wanted to get away just so he could have some peace of mind. And then obviously all of this happened.
Yeah.
All of what happened. I just thought it was just so well done.
Let me ask you this. Did you find Hawk's Rest before the fire?
Hawk's Rest.
The burned out lookout.
Where Ned was at, or
no, there was another one. There was an old lookout that had been burned out, and if you find it before the fire, you can go explore it. And it was one of my favorite recording moments ever. I get to tell the most ridiculous ghost story. So if you ever replay,
I probably will, because I want to try different dialogue options.
Yeah,
that's good to know. And that's the thing that was cool about it, was that there's so many different it. It encourages you to play more by explore more and replay it. And since the game's so short, it's not like it's going to be a killer. It's not like it's like we were talking about before. It's not a 60-hour game where we missed one thing and now we have to go back to hour 30 and replay up to that point just to find out what we missed.
Well, and it's funny because I'll get messages a lot that are like, I beat Firewatch. And I'm like, but then you didn't really play it. You know, take your time, explore it. Like, look at the different dialogue options. You don't have to go immediately on the mission. Go see what's off to the west, or go, you know, check out something else. And maybe there's something happening over there. Who knows? It's such a fun. I don't know. Somebody made me a pork pond sign, so I have one of the like official looking pork pond, you know, signs in my living room. And it's just such a fun game. It's such a beautiful, fun, quirky, weird, sad game, you know?
And I'm not even the type that likes those types of games, because like you were saying, how the purpose of the game is to explore the park a lot. And I'm not that type of person. Like, when I play a game, I'm very linear focused. It's like, all right, I need to go point A to point B. Let's do it. And I did explore a little bit in this just to kind of see some nooks and crannies. And, like, I found the turtle, which I thought was adorable. Once it got towards the end, I was so focused. I'm like, no, I need to find out what's happening in this mystery. So I was just so direct. I'm like, I need to know what happens next. And, but I think it's, especially the beginning of the game, is really meant for you to explore around and just kind of understand the layout of the park, and also to build that relationship with Delilah, which is, it's excellent.
It was fun.
So a couple more questions, because I know we're starting to run low on time. Was there anything to kind of, I guess, I probably should have asked this sooner, but this is kind of in regards to when you first started voice acting. Was there anything that surprised you or shocked you when you first started getting into the industry? Was there anything that you weren't expecting?
I don't know. That's a good question. You know, I think I kind of came into it with the idea of, like, I'm going to work in all the areas. And and so I do. But a lot of people stick to one and just do the one. And they do it great. I'm lucky enough to work in games and animation and commercial and trailers and narration and, you know, all these things. And it makes every day so interesting. But there are some people that they're like, I'm going to do anime and that's all I'm going to do. And I'm like, great. Good on you. You know what I mean? I guess that never really, I've just always come from, like, a diversification is the better route mindset. And so I guess that's the that's my final answer.
No, that makes sense. Because on your website, you have a lot of different, you have examples of, you know, narration, promo, animation, commercial, like just different samples for prospective clients to, like, check out.
I think the one thing that did surprise me that I am railing like hell against is how male centric it has been. And so, you know, from number of characters in an animated show, video game, to commercial announced, to trailers, for Christ's sake, it is all dudes. And I am done with it. So it's kind of been my personal mission to get more women out there, you know, and it's starting to work, right? Like, 10 years ago, women were not doing movie trailers. I think Melissa Disney did Gone in 60 Seconds, and that was it, right?
I didn't even think about that. You're right. You don't really hear women do movie trailers.
You do now. You do now. More and more. Certainly not even, but that's something I'm really, really railing towards. And, you know, the women who are working in this business are so fucking talented and so fucking rad, and they're just fun to spend time with, and the guys too. And so, you know, I think it's, people are starting to take notice. Again, you've got Dana, who's running Owl House, and it's all these incredible female characters. And then you've got Noelle Stevenson, who's doing She-Ra and the Princesses of Power, which, if you haven't watched that, it's fucking amazing.
I have not, but I'll add it to my list.
You know, more incredible female characters. And then, you know, it just on and on, you're starting to get these new shows and games and you know, people that are willing to take a chance and put different voices in the lead. And it's really, really fun. And it's not just I want girls to take all the leads and everything. Like, I just want different voices. Right?
No, it's not necessarily advocating for, like you're saying, you're not trying to be like, well, I want it to be all the other way now. It's just, no, just equal. Balance it out.
Right. There are 50, you know, half and half. There's 50% of this planet is women and 50% are men. So let's hear that. Let's see that. Let's live that.
No, yeah, I completely agree. And just kind of talking about bringing more diversity in voiceover and kind of talking about the Owl House, when we were watching it, the first thing my wife said was that she loved that the main character was, Luz, was Hispanic. Or she is, hold on, I actually looked it up. She is Dominican-American. And it was just something that she thought was really cool.
And Ida is a witch in her, like, 50s.
Yes.
Right?
And she's sassy.
Not some, like, young teen thing with giant cans and, you know what I mean? Like, it's just a different type of hero, which I love.
It's a funny show. And what I really like that show. I know it's I don't know. I guess it's weird for a 31-year-old man to really like a show like that, but I thought it was fantastic. Right. I don't know.
Why not? Why not?
Exactly. Okay, so the last question I have for you before we kind of, I have two actually questions to for you before to wrap up. One, do you have any advice for prospective voice actors thinking about or looking to get into the industry?
Take acting classes. No one cares if you have a nice voice. No one cares if you can do impressions. Accents are good to know, but take acting classes. I came with no acting background at all, and that's what I spent my time doing, and I poured myself into it. If you can't bring a character off a page, you're never going to get hired. So work on that. There are tremendous acting coaches who do Skype sessions, especially now during COVID. You know, there's a ton of resources out there. There's a website called iwanttobeavoiceactor.com that was put together by Dee Bradley Baker, who's one of the workingest men in voiceover. It's chock-a-block of incredibly valuable information. So start there.
All right. And then my last question for you. I'm starting this thing now. This is literally the first time I'm going to do this on the podcast. Because I was a little nervous for this interview because you're my first voice actor. I really wanted to try to do my best for it. So I was asking friends, fellow podcasters, and also my wife for like question suggestions and that kind of thing. And my wife mentioned a couple that I've already asked before or ones that I already wrote down. And then I'm like, do you have anything else? And so I'm going to end with this question. Okay. Chocolate or vanilla?
Ooh. Both. Swirl. probably chocolate.
that's what my wife is too. It's actually funny. I told this story I think on another episode of the podcast, maybe. I think it's already been out. My church one time went on a missions trip, right? And this ties back with chocolate and vanilla, I promise. It's not a complete non sequitur. But we went to a Dairy Queen down there and we were trying to get chocolate ice cream in our blizzard or whatever, and freaking when we asked for it, the guy was like, we don't have chocolate, we serve chocolate in our vanilla. And we were just so confused by what he was talking about. When the whole reason I even bring it up is because you reminded me of it when you said both, because he was talking about basically a black and white, just chocolate syrup and vanilla ice cream. But he didn't say that. He didn't say chocolate syrup and vanilla ice cream. He just said chocolate, right, in our vanilla. And it was the most confusing thing in my life.
Amazing.
Okay. So, where can the good people find you online? Any social media handles? And is there anything you would like to plug before we head on out of here?
Sure. I'm on the Twitters and Instagram at Sissy Speaks. It's Sissy with a C. Yeah, those are pretty much the best places to find me. Things I want to plug. Call of the Sea is coming out at the end of this year. Forever Go is coming out at the beginning of next year. Owl House, please watch Owl House. There's also a really sweet cartoon on Amazon called Little Big Awesome that's just so fun. I don't know. There's a ton of stuff coming out that I can't talk about or I'd have to kill you. yeah, I think that'll do it for now.
All right. And then as usual for me, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. You can also reach out to me, StillLoadingContact@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, please give a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use. Or if you want to support it monetarily, you can check out our Patreon, patreon.com/StillLoadingPod. Admittedly, I need to work on the rewards for there, so I'm going to be coming up with better options for people. Also, check out the network I'm a part of, the Podbeard Network, and the most important plug I have, check out the nonprofit organization I partnered with, the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of children receiving inpatient care at hospitals. Please check out the bitbybitfoundation.org and consider donating. And that will do it for this episode. Sissy, seriously, thank you for joining me on this episode. This was awesome to get to know you and to talk to you about your job and voice acting. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really nice getting to know you too.
And that will do it. So I will see you all next time.